Today, IFC Credit versus Bulk Petroleum Corporation.
May it please the court, Attorney Jordan Rich, Coner, Manning, Kalis, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, IFC Credit Corporation. This matter arises out of the granting of a motion for summary judgment by the magistrate judge in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Magistrate Goodstein found that there were no genuine issues of material fact which warrant this matter going to trial.
Was the money ever refunded? And they claim it was accord and satisfaction. You say no, but I don't see here where there was any tender of a return of it.
There was no tender of return. It is my understanding, Judge Evans, that the money was applied at some point, but not applied to the purchase. Was applied to what was in fact part of the last payment and some other matters, but in a sense it was never retendered.
Well, you're still claiming that much more is owed, and apparently this was applied to reduce the amount that was owed.
That is correct.
Is that what you're telling us?
But that is correct.
You're not permitted to do that, are you, if you're claiming accord and satisfaction?
Well, we don't believe there was an accord and satisfaction.
Well, I know you don't, but I've done the law. If there's a if you're not going to take it as accord and satisfaction, you have to give it back, don't you?
Well, I guess that is one position one can take. The problem here
is that the only position.
No, I think one of the problems here, Judge Evans, is the fact that given the way this circumstance worked, it would be very easy if this was sort of initially an IFC bulk type transaction. We have a third party in there. The third party is Finova. At some point during this transaction, Finova files bankruptcy.
Well, we understand that, but if they send you $31,000, and they send it for that specific purpose, not to be applied to their general obligations to you, but for the purpose of buying these tanks,
mm-hmm.
and you negotiate the check, and you don't tender the money back, how can you do that? You're trying to get your cake and eat it too, isn't it?
Again, Judge Evans, if the check had been sent to us, but it wasn't sent to us.
The relationship between your client and the other entity.
If Finova had been in existence, and at that point Finova had gotten the check from its lockbox, and then tendered it back to us, I would suppose, for argument purposes, the check would have been tendered. But the problem here was that it went from bulk to a lockbox. We assume it went to Finova. Finova was in bankruptcy, and the check then ultimately, as I understand it, went to the estate. There was at that point no way that the matter could have, in fact, been refunded. We couldn't refund it at that point. And is that a satisfactory response? I don't know, but that's the practicalities of the situation. In addition, this check that was in fact tendered, there is some issue here as to whether or not the purchase could in fact be made at that point, because there is a question here as to whether or not the lease in fact had been ended. Under the lease agreement, the purchase can only occur at the termination or at the end of the lease. There is a question that's been out there as to whether or not the last payment was made, actually terminating the lease. In addition, the $31,000 under the lease, if you take a look at the lease, that's in the record, what had to be tendered was the greater amount, not $31,000, but the greater of the fair market value, and that's what led to all of this, because there was never an agreement as to what the fair market value was. Bulk ultimately said, well, we're going to give you that $31,000, and that, in fact, gets into the issue of whether or not this accord and satisfaction was tendered in good faith.
Accord and satisfaction is a lot like a guilty plea in a criminal case.
Pardon? I
said an accord and satisfaction is a lot like a guilty plea in a criminal case. When you plead guilty, you give up a lot of rights, procedural rights, constitutional rights that you might have. If you accept a tender of a check, and it's tendered clearly as an accord and satisfaction, and I believe you concede that this was.
I'm sorry?
That it was clearly designated as this is an accord and satisfaction. And you accept that, aren't you waiving all these other...
But as again, if you take a look at the record, and specifically Mr. Girth's affidavit and the letters that attach to it, when that check... And let me see if I can give it to the fact situation, a little bit of the fact situation here. The check is tendered not to IFC. It is tendered to a lockbox belonging to Finova. It is sent on June 18th to that lockbox. It goes to that lockbox. We learn about it three or 4 days later. At that point, it is too late for us to do anything.
Why is it too late? You learned about it on June 21st, and the check wasn't negotiated till June 24th. That's 3 days. Why can't you?
But again, we had no control, Your Honor, over the lockbox.
Well,
we couldn't do anything.
To communicate with Finova.
Finova was in bankruptcy. To my knowledge, we had no direct contact at that point with anybody at Finova. And that's part of the issue here.
So you were negotiating with, what's the name of the fellow, Witkowski, weren't you?
But he was with IFC, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. But I assume that there was, you certainly knew where Vinova was located, didn't you?
Well, again,
the phone number was.
The practicalities of this is that the letters themselves that tendered the check, and the check went to the lockbox, two letters. One went to Paramus, New Jersey. One went to Chicago. If you look at the record, the carbon copy didn't go to Mr. Witkowski. It went to generally IFC. There was also this fax, which comes in, again, after the check is submitted to the lockbox. In addition, through all this entire...
Witkowski said he knew about it on June 21st.
That is correct, and there's no question he knew about it because he had gotten the fax. But again, by that time, the check was already in the lockbox. In addition, throughout this period of time, even after the check is tendered, there is discussions between Mr. Girth. There are discussions ongoing between Mr. Witkowski. There is no indication that there was going to be a purchase either before or after. And there's in these continuing discussions. Again, this goes to the issue, as we pointed out to the magistrate, of raising some issues concerning good faith and whether or not there, in fact, had been an accord and satisfaction. Again, I think you have to take a look at the facts that were submitted here. It is our position that, number one, there were material issues of fact here, not only as to whether or not there was an accord and satisfaction, but also whether or not it was done in good faith. We submitted to the court what we believed were facts in opposition to that motion. It is our position that rather than look at whether or not there were genuine issues of fact, what the court did was, erroneously, try the case on the affidavits. And you can take a look at that simply by the fact that he gave overemphasis to what Bulk said, yet did not take the inferences favorable to IFC. I believe I have several minutes of rebuttal. I'll respond accordingly. Thank you.
Mr. O'Neill.
May it please the court, I'm Bruce O'Neill, attorney for the defendants. There was a dispute between Bulk and IFC that's undisputed. Bulk sent in a check with a conspicuous full payment.
Why did they send it to Finova, though? This was after Finova, I thought, had notified them that it was going into bankruptcy and that it wasn't to send all checks to IFC.
No, there's nothing in the record, Your Honor, that Bulk knew that Finova was in bankruptcy.
Well, they had a notice from IFC, a notice from Finova not to send them anything
in the future,
send it to IFC. So why did they send this to Finova?
In January of 2001, there was a notice that came out from IFC saying deal with Witowski on the subject of fair market value. But after that, 2 months later, in March, there's a letter from an attorney saying, I represent both IFC and Finova and continue on the discussion. There's all three parties are discussing the topic back and forth. And
I find it a little surprising that you sent the check to Finova at the time. I think they were handing the ball back to IFC.
The fact is IFC and Finova were both very active in the negotiations, and eventually Finova gives it back to IFC in January of 2002. But what Magistrate Judge Goodstein found to the point is that no later than June 22nd, IFC knew that the thing had been tendered in full payment, and as Magistrate Judge Goodstein said on page 9 of his decision, they give no explanation as to why he could not have picked up the phone and called Finova at any time during the next 72 hours.
I asked him that question a couple of times, and his answer was, well, we didn't know how to get a hold of Finova. They were in bankruptcy. They were unreachable. That's what he told me. So,
And I don't think it's an adequate response, Your Honor. And if you follow the correspondence, IFC and Finova always carbon copy each other. I think there was an Elizabeth Cooper at Finova that gets carbon copies of all of Witowski's communications. They had the same lawyer representing them in March of 2001. They knew full well how to get hold of Finova. And they really, although it's said in oral argument, he didn't know how to do it. You certainly don't find any backup for that in the affidavits or the correspondence. And the fact is, the reason, I think, in the real world as to why they kept the money is if you take a look at the July 3rd, 2001 letter from the lawyer saying we can keep it. We don't consider it full payment, and we're going to keep the money. And citing poor old Bulk to Section 3-311 of the Illinois Uniform Commercial Code without any explanation as to why that allowed them to keep the money. And that was it. And Bulk even writes back a letter on July 5th saying, look, either it's payment in full or give back the money. On July 12th, the same lawyer writes back a letter saying, well, look at my letter on July 3rd as to why we're entitled to keep the money. And the fact that they kept the money and applied it to a disputed debt, not some liquidated sum, not some monthly payment that was fixed. They said we're going to apply it at least three-fourths of it to what we say you owe us, $125,000 for the purchase price. We never agreed to that. We were consistent that we owed no more than $31,000 under the documents. Bulk's activities were in good faith throughout. Magistrate Goodstein's decision on that was right on the mark. Indeed, to illustrate their good faith, you can look at the bad faith of IFC. They never had the equipment appraised, which is what they were supposed to have done if they didn't accept our belief in value. Their first demand was for $155,000. Their second demand was for $350,000. Their third demand was for $125,000. And their fourth demand was for $170,000. It was all over the map. But the fact is they accepted that check. They received the letter no later than 3 days before the time the check was cashed, did nothing about it, gave no explanation to Magistrate Goodstein as to why they couldn't have picked up the phone and called Finova and this constituted an accord and satisfaction. We submit to the court that the decision and order of Magistrate Judge Goodstein should be affirmed.
How did that $31,000 figure ever get in there in the first place? I mean, somebody must have thought that's going to be reasonably close to what the value of these tanks is at the end of this period.
You'd think. That was one of the real mysteries in this case as to where these numbers came from, and we had five different numbers, the four I just recited, and then, of course, the $31,000 number. But it's in the original document in 1995.
Well, I just would think somebody would have thought, you know, if you're going to put you can pay $31,000, or the greater of $31,000, or the fair market value. Somebody must have thought $31,000 is going to be pretty close to it.
I agree, and it's $31,419.40. So yeah, some thought went into it. Had to have gone into it by somebody in 1995. And mind you, these are tanks under the ground that are 20 years old. What use are they going to make of them had we returned to them? They were scrapped. They were salvaged. But yes, they must have some way of coming up with that specific number. As to how they did it, or how they came up with any of their other numbers, we don't know.
There seems to be a question of fact over whether the letter was sent with the check or was sent separately from the check, which would seem to be a pretty simple thing to verify. Are the parties still apart on that issue?
It was never argued to the trial court in any of the submissions, any of the affidavits, any of the proposed findings of fact, any of the responses to proposed findings of fact, that the letter and check were sent separately. It's been argued for the first time before this court in the appellate brief. But in the end, it makes no difference. What the code says is that the conspicuous statement of full payment has to be in either the check, the instrument, or in the accompanying communication, the letter. So we know for sure, absolutely, that Mr. Witowski admits, I got the letter with the conspicuous recitation of this being in full payment on Friday, June 22nd. He admits that. So it would make no difference. We think the facts are evident that they were sent together, because if you look at the back of the check, it was negotiated in Chicago, not the New Jersey office of FINOVA. And the fact is, they say it was sent to a lockbox. We have a receipt for the certified mail signed by a person. That's not the way lockboxes work in our understanding. But again, the key is that Mr. Witowski admits he got the letter with the conspicuous statement. Thank you.
To correct a statement of Mr. O'Neill, Balk did know that FINOVA was in bankruptcy. Mr. Girth, in his affidavit, indicates they were aware that they had filed bankruptcy. As to the issue of $31,419.40, the lease indicates that at the termination, assuming it was terminated, the amount that would be determined as the fair market value would be that figure or the greater amount. Mr. O'Neill indicates that if some way that IFC failed to obtain a appraisal. But again, if you take a look, if the court takes a look at the lease, the obligation was on both parties. Both parties continued to discuss the value, not only before the issue of the tender of this check, but afterwards. Balk never asked for an appraisal, and yes, there were various figures going back and forth. But ultimately, the issue becomes whether or not there was this accord and satisfaction. It is the position of IFC that there was no accord and satisfaction. The reasons being, number one, at the time of the tender, it is the position of IFC that it was not tendered in good faith. If you take a look at the facts as we list them in our brief, there are 10 or 11 facts which raise questions. Why Mr. Dhaliwal sent it, But again, we are asking the court to overturn the trial court's granting of the motion of summary judgment and let this matter go back to trial.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.